Hello and welcome to this episode of Unraveling. I am your host, Lauren Barber, and today I have a really amazing soul on the podcast to bring to you so much richness, so much depth of conversation. So I'm really, really excited to bring this episode with Laura Hart Swan. Laura is a priestess, birthkeeper, and womb and wild medicine woman. She facilitates an online 13 Moons Mystery School member space, which is open to join through the year to support a deeper understanding of the celestial tides that move us. Laura supports others to reclaim their medicine. She works with plant alchemy to facilitate healing in self and nature. Laura is the woman who held my closing ceremony a year ago. In 2023, after I gave birth to Vespa at the end of 2022. And I have been so honored to be in Laura's space on a few different occasions, actually quite a few social occasions, which have just been so beautiful. But she felt like the absolute perfect person to hold me in the closing and completion of the rite of passage that was giving birth to Vespa, but also giving birth to Sophia as well, and of course giving birth to myself in the process. So I was just so excited that Laura had space to come and join us on the show, and she shares so many rich, beautiful stories and rememberings through our conversation. We could have talked for hours, and I feel like we could have gone off in so many different directions, but what we shared today just feels so beautifully right and very timely in the current season as we come up towards Beltane this weekend. I urge you to take a few moments before we drop into the conversation with me and just tune in to your heart, tune into your body, feel your feet on the floor, take a breath with me. And join me in this episode of Unraveling as I unravel with Laura Hart Swan. Hi, Laura. It's so lovely to have you on Unraveling. How are you feeling today?
Yeah, I'm feeling good, thank you. How are you?
I am feeling good and excited for our conversation. I love to ask the question at the beginning of these conversations around the seasons that you are in, within your life, where you find yourself at this present moment within the seasons, internally, externally. So let's go straight in with that.
Yeah, so I am 41, so I guess I'm in that interesting liminal space between the kind of mother and potentially approaching autumn queen beginning. And in myself, I mean, goodness, I feel like we just roll through the seasons every single day. And, you know, throughout even the morning, the afternoon, the evening, I'm in a different season. But I feel like right now I've had a very intentionally deep winter that felt really necessary. So I actually feel a lot more ready for spring than I think I have done previously. That said, it's always a very powerful threshold. I think it actually, I believe, is one of the most powerful thresholds throughout the seasons and the wheel of the year, because it's kind of easier to go down, but to come back up is, it's challenging for our bodies and for ourselves. So, God willing, with the support of the plants and all the things, feeling quite optimistic about it, and yet also, I suppose, very tender and tentative. So I guess I am in that early spring of feeling like there's a lot of seeds that could burst forth, and I'm trying to temper my energy and prepare myself for the potential of a lot of them growing and needing support and tending. And so that's kind of like the mother, I guess, the full-blown mother energy is very much alive in my life, because, you know, I have a six-year-old and a busy family and a busy self-employed life. So it feels like that sense of being in the many arms of the full-blown solar, you know, midsummer, mother, chaos, frenzy, seeing it all, holding it all, kind of just being with that. That's really, it's a really powerful place to be. And especially, I think, because I didn't have any kind of mother template, it's really interesting to be weaving my own and, you know, finding my way with that. So that's really, yeah, powerful place to be.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling that. I remember every season how challenging I find it physically to move from winter to spring. Even though, I mean, you know, technically we hit spring, however many weeks ago, a few weeks ago. But yet still, obviously outside is not reflecting what we expect spring to be. But maybe that's more about expectations than anything else. What I loved was you saying about having an intentionally deep winter. And I'd just love to like unravel that a little bit with you and find out, like, what does that look like? What does that mean from a practical point of view, but also from a like energetic point of view? What do you mean by the words intentionally deep winter?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as we're saying, working mothers don't really stop. You know, that doesn't really happen. But I kept having this conversation with my husband around the fact that we had landed in this home a year ago now, and what a journey it was to get here. And it felt like there was this deep calling from the land, from the house, from my own body, from his body, from our child's body, to drop anchor and root. Like that we don't plan to go anywhere else. We don't plan that our lives, you know, who knows, but really we feel like this is our place. And in terms of practicality, that meant like quite a lot of surrender, a lot of stripping back, a lot of boundaries around seeing people that I, you know, in my heart obviously wanted to see and things I wanted to do and get excited by. But whilst I was witnessing everyone in this frenzy around kind of Christmas and all of the things, I was really just withdrawing and noticing how I could play with that energy of like the agency that I had within it. And it meant a lot of coming into root energy. So practically speaking, like spending a long time making bone broths and eating really good biodynamic meat and making things that take a lot longer and being slow and nurturing that need for everything to finish earlier in the evening and have a fire and wrap up in a blanket and feel into the grandmother energy. And I suppose maybe that is a little easier for me in this house because it's like 600 years old and I literally can feel the lives that have lived here and the kind of magic of the grandmothers and the land energy here. So to some degree, it was like any resistance to that was a bit futile. So I had to kind of fall back into it. And that, I guess, that spoke to a sense of having been so uprooted for quite a while before that, that sense of the huge privilege within a sense of security to be able to drop, which, you know, I don't take lightly. And as a child, I did not have. And so to me, creating the hearth, the home, and the depth of that, like that, yeah, there's no one else that was going to do it. And it sort of asked me really deeply to consider, how am I nourishing the root? And that was like my constant conversation with myself was what am I, you know, obviously we can really think about it on that kind of esoteric level, and we can get behind. I mean, certainly I find it easier as a double air sign. I find it a lot easier to connect in the spiritual realms, perhaps more so than I've done in my younger years to the embodiment piece. And as you get older, you know, you start to realize that your body at one point would put up with you doing all sorts and not loving it, nourishing it, seeing it. And it felt like a real internal conversation with my body that was saying, oh, yeah, can you just drop here and be here and be present here? So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I guess being in the first winter in your home as well, in this new home, must play a part to that. Like, it was almost like your home was calling you to plant those roots as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd started almost as soon as we got through the door with my medicine garden, which has been such years and years and years in the making, and coming to this house that, again, after so much upheaval and not finding our home, and then walking in and being like, wow, like there's a space here for this dream and this vision. That when we landed last spring or late last spring, I was like, oh my goodness, like I need to place these foundations in. And I know that it's a huge task. I know that these things take years. They don't just arrive, but I need to really focus on what it is that I'm building here. And exactly that. It was like there was this set of maybe seven or nine, I can't quite remember, I've got them all written down, plants that came through very, very strongly that wanted to go straight in the earth. And the very first plant that wanted to come was Angelica. And it was so interesting because, you know, Angelica is an incredible plant medicine, and it's all about spiritual protection. And so it was really fascinating to walk the land of this medicine garden and the land here and the wider land and the wider community land and the springs and the kind of everything that was here, feeling those kind of nature spirits that wanted us to have a deep relationship, and that there was a real communication of that. So exactly that, when the land began to go back in and down, there was no choice. It was saying, like, if you want to grow, and if next year by this time, by next summer, you want to have a garden full of people coming to do medicine circles or coming to receive healings or whatever it is, you're going to have to trust this descent. And, you know, for whatever reason, of course, when we're in our working as women in these realms, in our businesses, you know, that's kind of such a tough one, I think, when you're living in this world, to know that you still need money coming in and putting food on the table and everything, but equally knowing that there needs to be the honoring of the cyclical. And I think it's interesting because I always find that my work does fascinating things. So I'm about to go to Avalon to do a hand fasting, and it's Beltane, and it's like all of that's picking up, and the outward expression of the garden's coming. So there's going to be a lot of medicine there. But coming into autumn, I literally did a birth on astrological Samhain, where I was with a woman. And then that was my last birth. And then all through the winter, it was soul midwifery work. It was lighting candles for souls and lots of death and lots of supporting that. And yeah, so it is pretty magical when you do give it up to spirit and trust spirit, which can be such a hard one, right? Like the trust and in that relationship building, that it's going to be okay, and you can't kind of see it right now, but that there's a deep learning within, yeah, just following your absolute heart's calling and knowing that you will be held.
I love that. And how do you then tend to yourself in the emerging season? So as we're now kind of that energy is rising, how do you align with that in that different way? It's like the polar opposite, I guess.
Such a good question. And it's lovely because in my 13 Moons online school, I've got a woman who's from the UK and she's gone to live in Australia, and she wanted to have her anchor in both her homeland and there. And of course, now that we're coming into Beltane, she's going down into Samhain. And it's actually so powerful to acknowledge that the Earth Mother is always holding us in balance and she knows what she's doing. So I guess in answer to your question, it's a really ever evolving, constantly changing, and requiring of actually the bit which I guess my maiden self didn't love so much, which is the, for want of a better word, that kind of sense of masculine containment structure. And it was really funny with this year with the timing, because I've spent a great deal of my formative years, like 20 odd years, in shadow work for mother line healing and being gifted a path and support by my father to find that. And it just so happened that as we were coming into spring, my friend was going away and she offered us a place to stay down in Cornwall. And we haven't been on holiday for like so many years. And I was like, can we go for a few days? Does that work? And so we went down to my dad's favorite places. We went to Tintagel and we were in the lands of Merlin. And there were many, many gifts on this trip. And it was a real sense that that energy of the king or the magician or the Merlin was really kind of planted and saying the divine feminine and the work of the goddess is absolutely there and in you and in this body. But without the constant need for containment and discipline, she's just going to kind of flow too much and get lost. And so I guess it's just the constant balancing. And I think I love Beltane so much because it is speaking to the sacred union. And of course, in the generic sense of the fire festival, we talk about the fact that it's this sacred sexual union and it's life force and it's everything else. But actually, on a very personal level, it's a really interesting time to work with the divine union within yourself. Like, where am I lacking the discipline and the structure, and where am I lacking the magic of the flow? And I'll be honest, I mean, I'm not sure that anyone would ever tell you they're an expert in it, and that it's a constant, constant practice. And of course, with motherhood, I feel like that's a practice in and of itself. But I have to say that over the years of like mentoring women and having apprentices and doing kind of various things like that, what really has been such a gift is releasing women from the idea that there has to be some separate, perfect modeling of that. So if we're really coming back to the hearth, if we're really coming back to the family and the land and the community, then you could be cooking dinner for your 6-year-old at the same time as you're dehydrating some stuff and doing a soup and then thinking about your spiritual work. And so there's like you're constantly in that cauldron of potential. And so I feel like there's a great need for self-care discipline in the sense of carving out like time between clients, carving out and making sure you're clearing your own energy and being very cautious and safe within what you're doing. And there's a lot of need for creating the containment around what you're doing and creating those boundaries so that you're safe to release and let go within them.
It's a real merging of worlds.
Is. And I think a lot of people are quite scared of merging them, even though, ironically, if you're doing this work as your absolute soul work, then you know there is no separation at all. It will be mirrored in your life, whatever is coming up. Whoever's coming to see you, there will be magic and medicine for you interrelationally in everything you're doing. So, to have this strange idea that the work and life are separate is it's actually kind of keeps people quite trapped because they're like, well, how do you do that? Because I'm doing all these things, and then how do I have time for that thing? And it's like, but they have to become together. Like if you want to visit a sacred spring, then take your child with you. Or like whatever. Like it, yeah. Like this, the biggest problem with society is that we have been separated, and we've been segregated, and that division and separation is what's caused us this feeling of resistance to just living very truthfully.
And that sense of like I think I've noticed that in myself over, since becoming a mother, particularly 4.5-ish years ago, and more recently have really allowed that merging to be there and to be, to be preparing ceremonial cacao whilst the children are, on the, crawling around the floor and playing and like letting them smell and getting involved in it and try, coming to my yoga mat and moving my body with them rather than trying to keep it, because otherwise I feel like there's always a piece of me missing. There's always like a lack. And actually, when I allow, and don't get me wrong, it's really beautiful to have time on my own and to be really in those practices. But also, I think I'm almost more present and I probably get more out of them when it is amongst all pieces of me, if that makes sense.
Totally. It's very rich, and it's beautiful. And I think in the mother archetype, yeah, like I was saying at the beginning, there is a sense of that surrender that comes with motherhood that most maidens, working deeply in the birth realms, like you really see it. There's this maiden that like, well, I'll figure out, I'll crack the code, and I'll get to that magical point where it's all just gonna make sense, and I'll be able to compartmentalize it all. And actually, the greatest gift in it is to just drop it all, and all the false ideas of it all, and to, as you say, like, surrender. And actually, the gifts that are born out of that, I remember kind of that cusp of winter spring. I didn't feel very well. And I told my son, and he went and like just hand picked me loads of the plants that I had taught him are good for whatever. And he made me a tea, and I was like, what? No, you didn't. And he's like, yeah, it's this one and this one and this one. And I was like, how did you know? And he was like, I don't know, I just knew. And like, if I'd have kept my life separate from him, he wouldn't have the tender appreciation for plants that he does. He is his own very individual, unique medicine, of course. But it's so beautiful to, and I guess that comes into like the thing with your partner as well, is that the evolution from meeting one another in a maiden phase and in a, in the phase where they're in more in their younger archetypes, and then growing together, and then the beauty of them embracing all parts of you, even if they don't entirely fully understand all of them. But there's a lot of healing, I think, that comes to our maiden, to our mother, to our witch wounds, like to so much of us that just needs to be seen, especially by the people we live in our home with. And yeah, I mean, now I do kind of shamanic healing sessions and womb stuff in my house, and my husband's sometimes around, and it's, you know, obviously he's not in the sessions. I don't normally, he doesn't normally cross paths with anyone, but he's very aware of what I'm doing, and he's very gracious and cautious, and he's very, you know, he wants to make sure he's doing what I need to do him to do and be quiet and, you know, all the things. So it's very nourishing to be fully myself with him. And I think obviously that's a very big testament to him, but I don't think I could now exist in a relationship where that wasn't true.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. What a wonderful sacred container to have to hold you and your work as well.
Totally. And you know, that was one of the things for me. It's like I say, like, it doesn't always mean that your partner will necessarily fully understand everything you do. And it's so fascinating because I think on some levels he really gets it. And a really good example of like him in his kind of more divine masculine was when we first came, and the medicine garden, which is slightly separate to our normal garden, was just a like a walkway through. And the first thing he did was buy gates to have them to make sure that it would be boundaried and contained, and that the dog wouldn't go in there. And you know, and it was just like this small act of something incredibly practical, but actually meant so much in terms of like, I respect your work, I love you, I'm gonna make sure it's safe behind those portal doors. You know, it was really like everything. It was such a beautiful gift. And I don't think I'll ever kind of put that one down as being like a real sacred masculine role of containment for the feminine.
That's so beautiful, and it sort of makes me think, yeah, in similar ways, like how, my husband doesn't necessarily understand everything that I do, and he doesn't need to, but there is a level of understanding of kind of protecting that for me as much as he can within the structures of our life. He works in London, so it's, like there are structures that like hold both of us, and then there's, he will do everything he can to make sure I have my creative time, and because he sees that, he might not understand it fully. And I think if I was to try and make him understand it fully, it would, it would probably even cause more conflict in some ways. But it does, it's just a lesson in not needing to know necessarily everything, but just to know that you have that protected container is really beautiful.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think like there's often like a lot of women that I connect with in these kind of circles who are looking for a man, like an idealistic idea of a man who is maybe like going to men's circles and like, you know, or whatever it might be. And actually I feel like there is a lot of magic in the fact that I tend to just do my pilgrimages alone, and that's my spirituality, that's my place, and it feels really I'm not sure I would actually necessarily personally, I mean, I know that's not the same for everyone, but personally I actually feel really pleased that there is a space for that that's just mine.
Yeah, that's really powerful as well. And actually it made me kind of reflect on, some of the pilgrimages I've made in my life, like the big pivotal ones, have been alone or have been, away from him, and then to return to him, like that's the beauty of that. And I wouldn't have, I wouldn't. Sometimes there is that, like, I don't want to be on my own doing this. It's like a bit scary, but at the same time, those experiences have deepened my relationship with myself, which in turn have then deepened my relationship with him. So yeah, there's lots within that.
Rich, isn't it? Yeah, and like you say, the coming home is always just so much sweeter for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk a little bit more about your work and Yeah, you describe yourself as a priestess, as a birth keeper, and a womb and wild medicine woman. And I'd love to invite you to share a bit about your story to reach this place, like to reach those, you know, to come into embodying those words, what they mean to you, what that journey has looked like, if you feel called. It might be, you know,
In a
maybe there's some
nutshell.
summaries.
My little soul chose to incarnate into a family where my mother had herself suffered quite a lot of in her own family abuse and sexual trauma, a lot of pain and a lot of suppression of that trauma. And my father was just, well, I mean, him and his friends describe themselves as sacred rebels. And so he's like the most embarrassing dad at the school gate. But like, ultimately, once you grow up a bit, you're like, wow, so cool. I had a really tough birth landing, which I think a lot actually of 80s babies had, because it was a real time in the National Health Service of being born into a lot of traumatic processes. So separating mum and baby quite quickly, formula feeding, you know, just kind of nurseries in cold plastic bassinets in the nurseries in the hospitals, and you know, placentas, non-existent connection to those. And just a real, I was a forceps baby, so I've always had this real sense of being pulled out before I was ready. And also the physical impact of that within my body, which I still feel on a very fascial and sort of bone basis. When I was born, I think, as most mothers experience, my mother had a cracking open of everything. You know, you can't kind of come fully through a body, I think, without bringing through that heaven to earth kind of sense of everything. And from about the age of 7, I was very cognizant that my mum was not well. And then pretty much the whole of my formative years, she was in and out of like mental hospital and trying to commit suicide. And like I say, the foundations of the home just weren't really there. Like the mother was absent, and not absent in terms of like she was physically there, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, etc., completely dissociated and dangerous and scary and all the things. And you know, I had to grow up very, very quickly and protect myself, but equally at the same time was this total double air flower fairy, like trying to protect myself, feeling a lot spiritually and energetically. And I had this kind of refuge in my dad, who was this guy who would take me to Glastonbury regularly, and we would follow the kind of ancient deer trods, and we would pilgrimage, and he would tell me the stories of the knights and the grails and Guinevere and Avalon and Mary Magdalene and all the things. So I was given this sort of map, it felt like, as a place that I could find sanctuary. And, you know, home was tough because he was trying to hold a lot together and himself not being nourished or fed or supported. And so it was just a real recipe for disaster. And you know, he was so loving and caring, and he always worked so hard and absolutely worked himself into the ground, and then got sick very young. And I was pregnant with Hux when he was dying and living with us. And so I had been on this journey until that point. I had kind of found this priestess path, found teachers, had my initiations begun that path. And then that had all coincided with becoming a doula and kind of gradually finding my way through this divine feminine landscape. And prior to that, having spent, as I say, so long in the healing of my mother wounding. And then when my father was dying, it sort of opened the floodgates to the other side of the coin. And I'd already sort of done a little bit of death doulaing because it kind of comes part and parcel of the birth work, but it had really just, again, I felt like he had once again initiated me, and I got really, really into the soul midwifery and learned so much whilst looking after him. And yeah, on his deathbed, like, he was dying and he was telling me not to forget the Rose lineage and the Magdalene. And, you know, it was just utterly profound. But I was 37 weeks pregnant with Hux and going through holding together my business and everything falling apart for his life. And I guess it was just such a tough time, and it was a total unraveling, complete and utter, you know, hit the floor unraveling. And it kind of set the scene for, again, this kind of sacred balance between life and death, and a lot of clarity around the two. And, you know, as I say, through the doula work, always supporting women who were going through sovereign losses and working with the herbs and kind of, yeah, getting just deeper and deeper and deeper each time into these, like, relational fields of life and death. And, you know, when I did my priestess training, it was really interesting because it was almost like I'd had so much of the underpinning of it with going to fire festivals with my dad and got, like, kind of really breathing and living it. And then I turned up in this sort of training that was a year and a day, and had a beautiful week long in Avalon and doing plant medicine and doing lots of ceremony. And it was just maps upon maps upon maps, guides upon guides upon guides of the seasons within, the wheel, the astrology, the, you know, just so much of everything that had been part of my life. And I'd studied dance and philosophy, and so I'd already had this really deep underpinning as well of, like, bardic stories and myths and legends, and I'd always done embodiment practice and also this kind of more connected to the mercurial realm stuff. And it just sort of, it was so organic, like, it just flowed into offering these very natural circles and holdings for people, no matter what their rite of passage was that they were going through, whether it was life coming, life leaving, major transitions and thresholds. And it's just been very beautiful to be entrusted with that, and at the same time be deep in my own studies of Norse and pagan shamanism, and kind of start going down that route and becoming much more interested in ancestral healing and in what we carry in our bodies, you know, in terms of our DNA, but also in terms of energetically through our blood mysteries. And I had kind of really lent into a lot of that learning. And, you know, you're always gifted with teachers. They sort of pop up when you suddenly kind of go, well, I don't know, I'm not finding the person I think I'm meant to be working with. And then they come, and in the strangest of ways. And so I'm now at this really strange precipice, which is, as they always are, kind of a little uncomfortable and a little nerve-wracking, but also I am being completely once again called forwards, which, it's like I made a dedication to the goddess, and I made a very serious vow to the Lady of Avalon, and I feel like that is something that I am never going to put down. And I'm just about, as I say, to go to Avalon, and I'm on the cusp of potentially beginning to actually support other people to do shamanic work. But it's sort of like, who are you to do that? And despite a blessing from my teacher, and despite what I know to be true when I'm in those realms of that, it's not even me anyway, it's spirit, right? So I'm just passing something on that can be helpful. But yeah, it's brought me to this really interesting threshold of where people always ask, like, for you to be a teacher, and I've been really comfortable holding space, and I'm really comfortable teaching in the realms of one-to-ones, but to actually kind of stand up and say, I've got something to share that could be useful for you, feels, quite nerve-wracking. And that's kind of where I am. So I guess the priestess part is very much, it's quite an all-encompassing word, because actually you can be a priestess of so many things. And I find that, like, it encompasses our connection to the land, the waters, the plants, the stars, the astrology. It's actually very pagan in the sense that it's kind of earth-based, and people call themselves different things, but they kind of mean the same thing. But for me, the word priestess has always been the one, even though it sounds lofty and perhaps somewhat, I don't know, a little bit like, how could you claim that title? But I believe it is a self-proclaimed thing. And I don't think that, I think with many of us who have probably done this work in many lifetimes, there's a lot of medicine in not only claiming it for ourselves, but also being witnessed in claiming it for other women to choose that as well. And it's again, it can feel nerve-wracking to do that, but it's also the truth. And the one of the tenets of being a priestess is that you tell the truth, even if the truth is difficult. And that's not always easy. That's a really tough path to dedicate to, and people can get hurt along that the way in that, and they can feel hurt, and they can be called out of themselves, and it can be a really, really crazy path to take. But when you hold that mirror of truth, it sort of becomes this shattering of illusions that then draws a deeper part of you outwards. And that's quite confronting, of course it is. And I spend so much of my life in my own shadow work. I know what it feels like. It's brutal. It is a total unraveling. And I suppose that's where the priestess piece comes from. But also, because people seem to have this kind of interesting understanding of that word, it also feels important to put in the piece about being kind of a wild medicine woman and being connected to the land, if that's not fully understood. And as a birth keeper, again, that's been a huge journey where I have traveled from working and going and witnessing what happens within the hospital, and very much doing all the work that I needed to do around my own birth, as well as understanding that I am here for a birth revolution, and I'm here for women trusting their bodies and being connected to the absolute mystery and magic that is what it is to be a chalice of life, bringing consciousness to earth. And as a birth keeper, I no longer attend births alongside women in the system. Not because I don't care, not because I don't want to, but because I feel so strongly that in my own personal tiny weeny legacy of being part of this work, there's this piece where we have to step forward and own what we really believe in. And it's messy, life is messy, but you know, I was at the most beautiful free birth last year in November, and it was just so great because it was a first-time mum who was so committed and so clear. And it was so beautiful to attend to her in her birth and be with her and witness her. But the power was all hers, you know, and I think there's so much to say about being a birth keeper, but ultimately it's holding the space without needing to extract anything from it. It's just being in witness and making sure that that earth is fully grounded. So placentas, you know, I do a lot of shamanic healing around loss of that and our soul spirit anchor not coming fully into the earth. I mean, it's just all so huge.
Yeah, it's so beautiful to hear you share your story. And even though I know it's only a snapshot really of the
It's
story,
kind of like,
but
come on,
even within that, like there's just just so many layers. And what was sort of surfacing a little bit for me is that, I too was a baby of the 80s. I was born by cesarean.
on.
And what hearing your story and my own births for well, not for my two daughters have been birthed in hospital, and my second daughter was a cesarean birth. And what I think you sharing your story has given like gives almost like an essence of hope that there is still healing, like even when somebody is like earthside and has been through that, there is still so much richness and so much healing within that. And I think that's one of the things that, myself, I've navigated and still am navigating a lot of that. But what I guess what I was thinking was like, how in your eyes or in your heart, how do you feel we can start to make those changes around that trust? Because I know that both of my births, I wasn't rooted in trust. Like, I wasn't rooted in trust, and I can see that, and I also can hold compassion for myself because it's not my fault. It's not like me doing something wrong. It is the patterns and the stories, and it's so deeply ingrained that like I just didn't feel capable to unravel those stories before I gave birth. However, I feel like there is still so much that can be done beyond birth. And I'd just love to hear from you as, your thoughts on that and how you feel like we can start to make those changes.
I mean, I've been so passionate since I started my doula career. I knew, and I didn't have children by then at all. I was one of the few doulas who was on the training course who hadn't had a child, and I knew that for me, having as much information before I had a child was like going to be key for the birth that I felt so strongly that I wanted to call forward. However, the piece that seemed to be missing largely in the doula world was the shadow work aspect. And in priestess training, like that is like the main bit that you have to meet your shit over and over again. And it's really hard. And actually, you have to be prepared with enough spaciousness, mental fortitude, the right conditions, the right support, and everything else to do that. And so I offer these containers for women who do want to do that and are ready for that. And we do a you know in my whenever I hold clients, whether it's as a kind of physical birth keeper or as just a preparational, that bit for me was the bit that was always missing in so many of the trainings. Was like, but where is the bit where the you know because everyone's always a bit too scared, oh, we don't want to go there, it's too scary, or like we shouldn't go on that story, it's too dark, or you know. And it's like, My dad, his favorite quote was the Rainer quote, which is the dragons that you fear are the ones protecting the magic. And it's like looking that dragon in the eye, and I think there's a lot of fear inherent in the system with wanting to meet our darkest parts, and yet there's so much liberation in it. So, it, as I say, it's quite tough holding this piece that has become my work and my, to some degree, I had a human design consultant once sort of say to me, well, you actually have within your human design like this mirror thing, which is, really important for your work. And it's, I, you know, don't get me wrong, God, I don't want to make anyone feel bad or whatever, but sometimes that fierce medicine of like, well, what do you want? And do you actually want to do this? And you're going to have to go to that place you don't want to go to. And of course, it's always your choice. You don't, you can not walk down the path. But I would say that for me is the bit that has been very obviously missing from so much. And once you are out the other side of those births, again, women have kind of, it seems, two fairly distinct pathways, which is that they either shut it all back in and suppress it and then become ill, or enraged, or suppress it until their menopause when they suddenly are like raging and angry with the world, obviously, because they've trapped it all in their liver and now their liver's like kicking off and their hormones are kicking off and it's no surprise. And then you unravel the birth story and you're like, ah, no shit, right? Like it's not come from nowhere. It's not just your hormones. It is literally the stories and the patterns that are playing out in your ancestry and in your world. And so wherever we meet it, we will meet it. I think that's my point, is like we can kind of pretend it doesn't matter, but ultimately we are going to be gifted it on a silver platter if we keep ignoring it, and it's just going to pile up. So it's requiring a lot of bravery and a lot of courage. And again, this is where the herbs I've find come in so powerfully with a lot of my work, is that they bring this interrelational piece that enables somebody to go where they otherwise are very scared to go. So yeah, my work is so bizarre in some ways, because to some degree I don't always necessarily know what it is I'm going to do until I've got that person in front of me, and a particular plant medicine will come in, and then it will all make sense as to why they've even come to me, as to what we need to do. But yeah, it's really tough work, and it's not the piece that we are offered. We are not told, meet yourself fully before you meet yourself. Like
Yeah, it's not something that is naturally held by the world. So I think, I remember at a point in my pregnancy with Vesper, before I knew she was breech, before I, we went down the route of an elective C-section, but I remember I could see it all so clearly. I could see all of the things that like were sort of holding me back from fully trusting, but I couldn't reach a way of like unraveling them. And it was like it felt too big at that moment to unravel. But then what I've found since, my second daughter has been my like she has been an initiation in herself. Like she is as all of our children are, but for her, she has forced me into that like underworld journey, like without a question of a doubt, like daily. There is no more like initiatory experience than Vesper, bless her. Like she's amazing, and what she's shown me is more powerful, is so powerful in so many ways. But I think for me, I, and it kind of leads me on to something I want to, you know, talk to you about, because, you know, I know we're coming close to time, but I can't not talk to you about my closing ceremony, because that felt like a part of it felt like the first step in acknowledging that, okay, you know, these stories exist, but that I can choose a different path, like going forward. I can still choose to unravel some of the stories, and I can make, you know, I can put things in place that will be different for hopefully my daughters if they choose to have children, and show, I guess, show the world that, you know, that these rites of passage are so important to be honored. And like that felt like one tiny thread of reclaiming those ancient pieces. So, you know, you very, very amazingly held my closing ceremony pretty much almost a year ago. I think it was about a year and, no, maybe like a week ago, a year ago. So it feels really beautiful to be talking at this time.
I mean, time, I just don't even know how it works.
I know. No, it's, yeah, I mean, let's, yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. But I would love to hear from you. I have written about my experience, and I'll pop that in the show notes. But I would love to hear from you about like what offering something like that means, and how maybe these kind of ceremonies and these witnessings can help us to integrate and process and open up to a new way of walking through motherhood, walking through life, walking through womanhood. And yeah, just a little bit about, you know, your, why you started to maybe offer ceremonies or these kind of closing moments.
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, as I say, having this, like the mother that I had, once I started working in energetics and body work and things, I totally could just see, it made so much sense to me that bodies leaked energy, that boundaries were crossed, that there were different ways that our bodies expressed these pains and suppressed them. And I remember reading about the closing ceremony and thinking, wow, okay, like this is such a missing piece, which has been eradicated through the eradication of our native medicine women here as well, through what we know to be true, that women have always held one another together with cloth and have always woven together and have always put blankets around one another. And in whatever way, we don't have the ceremony there. And actually, we don't have a lot of what would have been either oral or completely suppressed and diminished by the time the witch trials were kind of in full force. And that beginning of that separation of society. And so when I heard that there were people offering a way to support women in this way, I was like, yes, oh my goodness, because to me, when I go to birth, I literally see like the portal open, and I see like how the mother's energy field changes, and I see how wide and open she becomes. I mean, obviously all throughout pregnancy, it's not a moment in time, it's a real unfolding. But by the time she has been cracked open, like that, you know, those imaginal cells have gone to goop and she's being restructured, she is just bereft in today's society, because she's holding everything and isolated, and she's completely not in a village and not held and doesn't have women coming round and giving her foot baths and rubbing her feet and, you know, all the things. But it offered a way to bring together whatever she wanted, whether it was one-to-one or you know, in her big group of women. And for you, obviously, that was so powerful to have all of those women who you love dearly witness you. And because your friendships are so deep and raw, and you're so connected in that way, it was really important, I think, for those women to see you. And as it often happens, there is this this moment where you realize that like ceremony, kind of how it looks for a picture online or something, is actually a lot more about the truth of what's there, the crying baby, will this work, how the timing's going to work, somebody's late, you know, whatever. And so it's real. And especially in someone's home, literally we were next to your fireplace, and I couldn't stop thinking about your beautiful dog either, you know, and she was there as an elder for sure. I mean, she sat herself mid on those things, and she was like, right, I'm here, and I'm holding this space, and I could really feel that from her, and it was so beautiful to have her there as well. And I think often people kind of, you know, they put the dog away or kick the cat out, but actually these are our animals, these are our sacred familiars, and they bring so much magic. And yeah, it felt so important. And when I did the first training I did in it, there were obviously, I mean, it was just so beautiful to, how crazy is it that, you know, it's just so beautiful to have women tying each other up in cloths and calling back the energy and drumming and singing and witnessing and saying, we see you've been cracked right wide open, but now we're all here to weave you back together again. And then from my first training in it, I then was kind of offered the pathway towards this curandera, this Ecuadorian, actually an ethnobotanist, so very connected to the plants, and her wisdom keeping, which had actually influenced the first training. So kind of finding the real elder to go back to and the real wisdom keeper with a lineage, with a long standing history of her grandmother's teaching her as a child and kind of coming forward. And obviously from my own perspective, being a very shamanic thing, that it goes a lot deeper. And it's now become a part of when I do my shamanic work, I often find, particularly with womb healing, that the third session, we sort of go head, heart, root. The third session requires the closing of back of those energy channels, because often what we've been doing is rewiring, working in different energetic fields of the head and the heart and the womb, clearing entities, doing all sorts of interesting work, and then it needs to be closed in a new container again. And then of course when you come out, that you're literally being released, and you know, it's so powerful. And there's a lot of binding within our kind of cultural context and our ancestral context, but there's also a lot of unbinding that we can do as well. So it's a very profound practice, and it's holding it as a ceremony, of course, is like another layer, because it's not just the physical practice of offering that to one-on-one and doing womb work and energy work, but it's also a process of holding a room full of ceremony. And then we had the grandmother bowl, and we obviously had way more people there than we actually had there. And yeah, it's like layers upon layers upon layers of reclaiming what is ours as communities and as people and as women. That's the bit, you know, that a lot of us have had to be the kind of, for better or worse, the kind of trailblazers of trying to re-find this wisdom and pay to learn to do it and all the things. But of course it was like herbalism, it was the medicine of the people, it wasn't something that, you know, we live in the world we live in, and that's how it is. But hopefully it goes one step towards the vision that we have for reclaiming these as being super important, not just for after birth, but through every rite of passage. And I remember thinking that when my dad was dying, when people die, like wrapping them and rocking them and returning them, being held like babies, that, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And in every which way of being able to wrap that cloth around someone and witness them and hold them and say, I see you in your absolute imaginal cell mess that has turned back to goop, but it's okay because that's just going to rebirth you. And at the moment, we don't know what that looks like. And gosh, that's uncomfortable, but like, it's going to come, you know.
Yeah, wow. So profound when you explain it in that way as well. And I think that's one of the things that I it's like it's so sometimes so overwhelming to think like, how do we even begin to reclaim these practices? Like I've often worked, you know, a lot of these practices, I'm like, where have they come from? You know, you want to, but it's so hard to get the information. And I feel very strongly like I have Celtic roots, and like I definitely feel like I feel so called to exploring and pilgrimaging around like the United Kingdom, and I actually don't feel that called to go anywhere else beyond, like I feel like I want to find more out about my lineage here, but I think it's just it can feel so, as you said, like there are some people that are the trailblazers to start to show these practices and bring them back. Like, yeah, like kind of like they've been buried so deeply that they're just, it seems so many of them seem, you know, if you was to speak to most people, that it would feel like such an alien concept, some of these practices, but yet they're so ingrained in us.
I think they are. And I think that's the problem, is that we have to seek out Indigenous people who have unbroken lineage to even have a sense of what our own potential one was. And I think what I often find when I do these trainings is that, particularly if you do them from something that's not your native land, and I feel, you know, so passionate about reclaiming my native Norse pagan, you know, my ancestry, coming from more of the boreal forest as well as other places, and there's this real sense of like, I'm being shown a way. However, it's up to me and spirit to work in a way that also is in complete integrity and authenticity for me, and not to just do something because that's the way somebody else does it. And that's not to discredit or to, you know, dishonor a teaching, but it's to honor that it's really important that we're coming from integrity when we place our own hands on somebody. Like if I don't have a particular connection to a particular plant or animal or thing, now it's a tricky concept, right? Because in my own personal belief system, I really do believe we are all from one source. And so there's that underpinning it. But of course, culturally, that's not the kind of epigenetic truth. And so it's a very fine line between honoring what you're taught and also honoring what is yours to learn. And I've often found that, you know, I don't even think I could teach what I now do, because I definitely don't do what I do, an amalgamation of like abdominal massage that I've been taught on massage trainings. I do like so many different techniques and things that I've learned, and then merge them with all of these amazing wisdom keepings, and then feel in to what is needed in that moment. And so there isn't a one size fits all for doing it. And yeah, it's a really tricky one. It's a really interesting one, wanting to honor your teachers and your elders, but also knowing that you're seeking the deeper meaning from your heritage as well.
I love that. Wow. I feel like we could, I mean, I honestly feel like we could talk about things for hours. I can't even put into words how rich this conversation has been and how many threads of, you know, I want to go off on this way and this way, but alas, we do have a container today. But before we close, I would just love to invite you to share anything that is coming up for you, in terms of how people can connect with you in this next, you know, in this season, you know, if there's anything you want to share about any of your offerings, where people can find you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It's I my website, laurahartswan.com. I have my Instagram, laura_hart_swan. I am just about to begin my garden sunset medicine sessions here in the medicine garden. So there's like 2 hour sessions bi-weekly on a Wednesday from the 8th of May, and that it will run May, June, July, August, probably September, depending on the weather. So that's 2 hours of like connection with the plants and lots of embodiment practices around plant connection. So that's one of my kind of babies that I'm tending, and I feel really passionate about people reclaiming that land medicine, particularly with native plants. And yeah, I'm going to be holding a shamanic wisdom retreat this summer. And yeah, on my website are all of my many kind of online and in-person offerings. I've obviously got what you can see behind me, which is the treatment room that I work from now, which is here in West Sussex. So yeah, if anyone feels the deeper call to come and work with me here, the invitation is there.
You are a true kind of, there's a cauldron of all these beautiful offerings. I love it, and you're definitely close to my heart when it comes to that sort of sense of all these different pieces and offering, yeah, lots of different ways to connect. It's really beautiful. So I would
not all at the same time.
not possible.
Yeah.
This has been so, we really truly are. I think that's how I describe myself a lot. It's the only way I can describe myself, really, because nothing else seems to fit other than multidimensional human. But thank you so much for sharing all of your stories and your wisdom, and I feel like there's so many gifts within this conversation, and I'm, you know, looking forward to listening to it back to receive those once again. But yeah, are there any parting gifts you wish to share before we close?
I guess just wishing everyone just this beautiful Beltane tide, just to really lean into the agency of their own fire, and to also learn to harness the fire in beautiful ways. So yeah.
Love that. Thank you. And thank you so much for sharing this today.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unraveling. It has been such an honour to share this time and space with you, and it was such an honour to have Laura share her wisdom and her magic with us as well. I really hope that you have received the many, many gifts of Laura through this conversation, and I would urge you to connect with her more if you feel called to join her in any of her beautiful offerings. And if you want to continue the conversation, you can come and join us in the comment section of my Substack publication held by Lauren Barber, and share your thoughts, share your questions. And if this episode resonates in any way, it would be such a beautiful gift to me if you could share it with anybody who might like to listen. If you could share it on social media, you can tag me at Lauren Sarah Barber on Instagram. And you can always drop me an email, lauren@laurenbarber.co, to let me know what you think of the show. Thank you so much for sharing with me, and I wish you a beautiful, beautiful continuation of your unraveling journey.